I was glad nobody called the cops because we were opening all the valve boxes and fire hydrants and so on. Had you told me that that would happen in Germany 10 years ago, I would have said, what did you smoke? We have no exit strategy. This needs to work. If it was that easy, I would be on a beach now and not in an airport hotel in London, right?
Can you ensure me that you don't do more than 4 moves in the next 12 months?
I'm not going to make promises. I only make promises I can keep, and I'm not sure I can keep it.
Mid-April, Global Water Intelligence invited me to their annual Global Water Summit, and I got to interview a bunch of water leaders on a dedicated podcast booth. Now that's hours of rushes, and I'm mindful of your time, so I trimmed the pieces down one by one to keep the most snappy parts. So for some, beyond the short pieces you can catch on every social platform in the next weeks, you'll find them merged together in a summary episode that will take you through 8 interviews. Reinhard Hübner will also feature there, but I believe this 360-degree fast update on his first appearance on the podcast 3 years ago is too interesting to be simply archived in my hard drives. It is sort of my running gag every time I bump into Reinhard or Dirk Bruzes to ask them what companies Skion Water just acquired or will acquire next. And every time they answer me something like,
actually, we are slowing it down a bit.
You can see it in their eyes. They believe deeply that they are really slowing down. But then, in the same conversation, just minutes later, you'll hear,
we did 4 acquisitions, there's 2 more in the pipeline.
So of course, we discuss a bit of company building in this short piece, notably how Skion Water needs to structure and report centrally a decentralized organization. But we also address water reuse, impact of climate change, regulatory challenges, company culture, innovation, growth, and a little bit of PFAS. All of that in 13 minutes, yes, it's crazy. But if you're like me and you'd crave a full episode where we go into Skion Water's evolution over the last years and what we can learn from it, tell me in the comments or send me a message and I'll make it happen.
Hi, Reinhard. It's been a while.
Yeah, good to see you, Antoine.
I have to say, I was asked yesterday, what's my favorite interview ever on that microphone? And my answer is still the same. It was the one with you. So,
oh, thank you. People love it. I just had an applicant who told me that he listened to the podcast.
He really wanted the job.
Interview. He wanted the job, yes. He signed the contract as well. We wanted him. So all good.
We are at the Global Water Summit, whose theme this year is security for a changing planet. What do we start with? Security or changing planet? What's the most important for you?
I mean, they go together, right? Planet is changing for sure. You can see the impact of climate change where I live. The forest where I live since more than 10 years now, 1/4 of the trees is dead or severely damaged from drought. And that is climate change, right? So if you talk security and changing planet, the security piece is, where's the water going to come from for people? And also, where's the water going to come from for food? Because if that drought affects agriculture, then also agriculture all of a sudden needs to be irrigated in a country as bad as Germany. We're building the first municipal wastewater reuse plant in Germany. We are also piloting new technologies for groundwater infiltration of river water. Had you told me that that would happen in Germany 10 years ago, I would have said, what did you smoke?
You say we?
Yeah, us, Skion Water, yeah.
So you're not only industrial anymore.
No. We're pretty big in municipal in Europe and also North America. And so in north of Germany, close to the North Sea, we're building a wastewater recycling plant that upgrades municipal wastewater to demineralized process water for 2 factories. And it's pumped in separate pipes to these factories because the groundwater in that area is not sufficient anymore in dry summers. And if they abstract too much, saltwater intrusion will destroy the aquifer. And that, again, had you told me 10 years ago that this is the reality in Germany, I would have said you're crazy. So if you talk security and changing planet, here you have changing planet, and then we need to come up with technical solutions to make water security happen, right?
We need to come up with something. That means it doesn't exist yet?
The technical solutions often exist. There's also a governance element and a changing behavior element to it, which is more difficult to come up with. We need to change the way we use water. We need to be more mindful of consumption reductions and things like that. In many countries, it's leakage. But at the same time, we also just in many countries need to fix the governance. Northern Europe is still pretty blessed with sufficient water most parts of the year, and we have the infrastructure. But if you take the world, it's a major challenge also on the governance side, because we need to get our act together. I mean, how can a country that has real water scarcity, and I'm not picking a country now, have 50% of the water lost in leakages or more? And that's not one country, that's many countries.
You recently joined the European Water Reuse Association. Does that mean that's one of the way outs you find, which is reuse?
Reuse will be totally necessary.
Municipal, industrial, both?
Both. Let's face it. In London, we drink direct potable reuse water. Oxford has a wastewater treatment plant that goes in the Thames. We abstract here around Heathrow into the reservoirs around Heathrow Airport, and then we make drinking water from that water again. Is it direct potable reuse? No, but it's reuse. And it's the right thing to do. And we will have to do more of that. We do it in factories. There's recycling inside the factory. We have to do it elsewhere, right? And I mean, if you look at Singapore, they show us how this works. Israel, they show us how this works. It's perfectly fine and safe, but we have to get people used to that concept. And Europe will have to do major amounts of reuse.
In terms of ski on water, we haven't talked in several years, which means you have been super active in between. But last year, when we shortly discussed, we're slowing down the acquisitions. And over the past 12 months, we did only 4 acquisitions, which for most companies would be the activity of a decade, if not more. Does that mean you're really slowing down, or what's top of the agenda for SkiOn today?
Actually, we are slowing it down a bit. The reason is that we grew so fast. I mean, if you take 2020 as a reference year, we almost tripled in turnover between 2020 and now. We were 500 million-ish in 2020. We're 1.4 billion budgeted this year. There is something to absorb, and it's not just M&A, it's also organic growth. So we have to do some homework. There's also some regulations we have to deal with, CSRD directive, global minimum tax, the supply chain acts in various countries, which actually is on the one hand an opportunity because it forces you to look at things and reflect on what are we doing, why are we doing it, how are we doing it. But it also always comes with a lot of bureaucracy. And that is the sad part. It's good to look at it, but the amount of reporting you have to create in a decentralized group actually is a challenge. So we actually have to do some homework to figure out how to make these kinds of things happen because they are laws, right? We have to be compliant.
So structuration of ski on water, how does that reflect in your day-to-day operations?
We found our way in keeping it decentral, right? And now we have to find our way in how to make certain things happen that we have to deliver because we're a large corporate from a legal point of view without destroying the decentral culture. It requires some resources. It also requires processes, and IT helps, of course. And a lot is then training of the local entity so that they can do this. So we have a Ski on Water Academy now where we do all kinds of trainings, and this will be part of it, right? There's also some synergies we can still capture, right? Especially on sharing technologies and supporting the collaboration between the companies. And that is also something we want to focus on a bit more because there's a lot of opportunity from taking from one part of Ski on Water and using it in other parts. And we're very successful with that already, but there's much more headroom there.
So your moves now are kind of complementary moves. If I try to read between the lines, you extended to Chile, you consolidated Scandinavia, you also brought technology with some measurement and control part in the group. So you're really adding the last pieces of the jigsaw.
We did an acquisition in India, right? We are in India with Puck and Ovivo. We're now getting into the pharma market in India with this acquisition. So India is a continent, right? And India is happening. We're really looking at what can we do in India and how does India play? It's a complicated country because of the size and the cultural differences and also politically, sometimes every state is different, right? But it's at the same time a huge opportunity. So we're looking at that. And then at some point, you also have to figure out Africa as well. That is probably even more difficult than India because it's even more diverse. And diversity means you have to understand every market because it's not the same. That's then probably the areas where we will still invest time and effort to learn, right? Before we get into something, there's always the phase of understanding, right? Before we went into the US, we spent a year and a half figuring out how do we want to do North America. Then we went into South America. We had a lucky shot with Ecopreneur. And then we figured out around Ecopreneur how we want to continue. With India, we're now in the process of figuring some things out and see how it works. And we'll do the same with Africa. But it's always first some prep work. And then if we find the right target, we go for it.
You mentioned $1.4 billion of turnover schedule for this year. You will consolidate Ski on Water at that level. And then go for the next one, or that is where you want to settle?
Now we grow, right? I mean, we did 4 acquisitions. There's 2 more in the pipeline, not very big ones, but there's still some happening. We are still looking also in North America for industrial type companies to grow the industrial business in North America. But we will not do the pace of the last 2-3 years for a while now. There's always waves, right? You acquire and then at some point you also have to do the homework. I mean, we're not doing a full integration, but still there is a soft integration. And then it is also important to spend time with these companies to capture the synergies in terms of sharing technologies and so on. And also sharing what they have with the rest of the group. And that is very value adding and also very rewarding and fun because it's nice to work with our own people, right? And not just buy new companies. So no,
you mentioned
natural progression.
Non-revenue water as one of the areas. It's also an area where you have made a minority investment, which is not exactly your typical move. I mean, with Fido.
At heart, we are a treatment company. We do water and wastewater treatment and the services and consumables around treatment. So we're not going to be a big player in network, but my history in water started with leakage here in the UK, working with Thames on their leakage situation in 2006. I'm emotionally attached to leakage, and it's from an impact perspective, extremely important. And when Fido came about, I just tried it, right? I had managed leakage detection and repair. So I just went out and tried it, and I was so fascinated by how well it works. We then, together with Emerald, went for it. I did leakage detection with my kids and my brother's kids, and we found a large leak in front of my brother's house. That's how easy is Fido, right? So it was good fun for the kids. I was glad nobody called the cops because we were opening all the valve boxes and fire hydrants and so on. But it was good fun.
Does that mean that you try to experience firsthand every of the technologies or companies which you're investing in?
No, I'm not doing diving in a digester to see. It's a job, right? Digester diving. It's a really tough job. No, but this one I had to do because I had done it to the last level of detail myself. But we look at the technologies, and when we do an acquisition for technologies, we really look at the technologies. Sometimes we buy one before we invest and test it ourselves. Sometimes we visit enough customer reference installations. In a technology acquisition, you have to get your head around the technology.
But that is specific to ski on water, if I'm right. Because what I heard is that you're the type of investor that doesn't just take for face value whatever is presented. You're saying, no, I want to test it for myself, make my own opinion, and then only I might consider it. And which is not always the case. Some would believe a deck or would believe...
I mean, we have no exit strategy. This needs to work. Sometimes you can just sell it on the greater fool theory, and a few years later you sell it to somebody else and the story is good, but we want to keep it for long term, so it has to work. And I mean, do we make mistakes? Of course we make mistakes. We had failures in technology investments, and technology investments are more difficult than platforms, because in a system integrator, when you see the plants they build, you know whether they can do their job or not, because at the end, if they have enough references that work and where they made money, then they know the system integration play. With a new technology, the proof is in not just one application, but in many applications, right? Because every situation is different. So we had failures. Of course we had failures. We did a zero liquid discharge investment a while ago in a humidification, dehumidification technology that failed. The technology works. It's not a failure, but for us, it didn't do what we wanted it to do for us. It's not like a bad technology. It's just for us, it didn't work out the way we hoped it would work out. You win some, you lose some.
Last time, the most crazy pitch you had got was for someone who reinvented cavitation and wanted. Did you have something crazy in between?
No, not that crazy, but there's still amazing business plans where you wonder how somebody with a non-differentiated technology, like some new sludge disintegration technology, wants to go to 100 million revenue in 3-4 years and then have 50 million in profit. I mean, if it was that easy, I would be on a beach now and not in an airport hotel in London, right?
Or you might come back from the beach because you might be bored and still be in the hotel in London, because I think that's what you like to do.
Yeah, but of course, you're right. Of course, you're right. I couldn't live on a beach.
I have three short questions to round it off. The first is, if you had to define the water sector in three words, what would those three words be?
Purposeful, fun, a lot of potential. Oh, those three words.
It's okay. I'll take potential. If you look now the 5 years ahead, what is the number one challenge we have to face?
It will be the impact of climate change on water supply.
But if we're more specific than that.
Okay. The challenge will be to provide the water for agriculture in the countries where the rainfall will not be sufficient anymore. The industrial and human consumption can be solved. 80% to 90% of the water is agriculture. And if you have to start to irrigate in all those places where today it's rain fed, if climate change were to get to that point, then we have a real problem.
So that was 5 years in the future. Now for my last question, look 12 months in the future. And what is the number one solution that Skion can provide?
I mean, the EPA just published PFAS guidelines that are very challenging to achieve, I would say. I'm not going to say what I really think. I don't know how you can come up with these numbers, right? It's like, how can this be achieved? Who can pay for this?
Because it's hard to measure, because it's hard to pay for, because what's the number one challenge here?
It's hard to achieve and it's impossible to pay for. But PFAS is a real problem, and we invested into Etometrics, or we acquired Etometrics because it's part of a solution train that we developed for PFAS on-site destruction. There's different ways to concentrate PFAS pre-destruction. We work with partners there or with established technologies. The angle that's unique is how we can destruct it and how we do the process design for an efficient destruction with enough pre-concentration. And now that PFAS will have to happen, I hope we can contribute to making it as economical as possible.
So you see destruction as something which is happening in the next 12 months, because the regulation says removal, which is moving the problem to a different place. Destruction is probably the right step, but it's also something where people will have to pay for.
Nothing in the water industry will happen in 12 months in large scale, right? 12 years maybe. But if we get one or two systems things in the next 12 months where we show that we can do on-site destruction in a way that safely eliminates it, then you also don't have to move the problem and you don't have to deal with the transport of the problem. And then if something like that goes wrong, then we have an answer for decentral solutions. That would be a benefit compared to also transporting this stuff somewhere. And then what? Do you want to landfill the ion exchange resins or the activated carbon? Do you want to incinerate it? What happens then? So if we have two systems running in 12 months that show it works and where we can prove it works and we can show it's economical, then that would be nice for us and also important for this problem, because the PFAS problem exists in other countries as well. And the guidelines might not be as strict as the EPA guidelines, but guidelines are coming.
Reinhard, I could speak with you for hours, but you have a congress to attend, so I won't take too long of your time. I just want to ensure that one. You said you have two M&A moves in the making. Can you ensure me that you don't do more than four moves in the next 12 months?
I'm not going to make promises. I only make promises I can keep, and I'm not sure I can keep it, but let's see.
Thanks a lot, and enjoy the rest of the summit.
Thanks for listening to Don't Waste Water. This podcast was brought to you by GF Piping Systems. Loved this episode? Head over to Apple Podcasts to subscribe, rate, and leave a review. See you next time.